Hello, this is Joe McGee. You know, we've been doing seminars across the country for years. Seminars on marriage, parenting, men, money, and family. We want to encourage you to email us and let us know if this podcast has helped you. Or maybe you have joined us live at one of our seminars. If you have a testimony, you just want to tell us what God's doing in your life, please email us at mail@joemcgeeministries.com, or you can contact us through our website, joemcgeeministries.com. There you will find helpful articles and tools to help you grow in God, your marriage, and your family. We love you guys, and we hope you enjoy the podcast. You know, we're talking about getting ahead, but one of the greatest places about getting ahead is just getting ahead financially. You know, in today's economy, everybody's talking about how hard it is or how bad it is about gas prices up, house prices up, you know, economy's down, income's down. You know, God promised that he'd supply all of our need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. There's an element of faith, believing that, and then there's an element of works. You know, God said, you're going to walk around the walls of Jericho, and then I'm going to knock them down. You're going to lift up the staff, and then I'm going to part the water. You're going to make the mud, then I will open the eyes. Again, faith without works is dead. So, money matters. I remember one of the greatest things that ever happened to me personally was when I first got married. I'd had a pretty good job. I'm running a backhoe for a sewer pipe company. We laid sewer pipe. So I'm running a backhoe, making good money, unless, that is, it rained. If it rained, we didn't work. You don't work, you don't get paid. Plus, we had no health insurance. There was no dental, no health, nothing. So I'm making good money when the sun's shining, but boy, if you got 4 or 5 days of rain, I'm not making any money. I got no insurance. My wife got pregnant. I can't pay for the baby, and there's no money. I thought, man, we got to do something different. So anyhow, my wife said, I'm not going to marry until you get a real job. So I went and applied to a big company called Olin Matheson down on the Tennessee River. And I wasn't even a janitor. I just worked there for 2 weeks pulling nails out of wooden blocks. 2 weeks into it, they called me and said, Joe, you're being promoted to janitor. You start next Monday. This was on a Wednesday, so they gave me the long weekend, and that's going to be shift work. So I went down and I applied, and I became a janitor, and it was a union shop. And so there's a bid board down in the shop where you punch in, you know. And so I'd look at it, and if anything on that board paid, you know, pretty much a nickel or a dime more than I was making, I'd sign my name on it. And I was shocked to learn how many places people wouldn't work. And I remember sometimes I'd sign my name on something, and somebody would say, McGee, you don't want to work down there. You know what that's like down there? That's hot. You don't work in the melt cast department. It's just too hot. Man, you get burned up, that molten aluminum. Or, McGee, you don't work down there. You know who the foreman is down there? Man, he's from hell itself. You don't want to work for him, you know. And I just couldn't get over how many reasons people gave as to why they didn't want to move up the food chain or why they didn't want to take a job. So I was just naive enough that my father had always taught me that, you know, I have a lot of hobbies. Work's not one of them. I work for cash. And the more cash I can make, the better I'm going to like it. So I just started writing my name on joint. If it paid anything, and everybody made more money than me, I'm the janitor. I'd sign up. So finally, started getting some jobs, you know, a little manufacturing jobs, running a little machine or a bigger machine. And, you know, and I'd run down, work the warehouse and drive the forklift. And, you know, 2 or 3 years, I'm moving up the food chain. You know, why? Well, I'm bidding on this and I'm bidding on this. And so finally, one day, I got the best job they had, which is a furnace operator. And I kind of signed my name up on the board. And I got promoted, and I got that job. Well, man, it's an incredible job. I loved it. And so I remember I'm up there on that thing, and one day I'm up on the furnace, and you empty the furnace 2 times in an 8-hour shift. So there's 4 operators, each with their own 20,000-pound furnace. So it's up on a big mezzanine, and it is hot because those big electric induction furnaces. And so we buy these big old giant sows from the Navy, big giant chunks of aluminum, put them in there. Of course, sometimes they got water and they'd splat up in the air like a volcano. But twice during an 8-hour shift, you had to empty that furnace. That's a pretty simple process. Here you're up on a mezzanine. There's a giant 2 big steel plates with 6 squares in it. And it's time that you're reading the meters. It's hot enough. It's melted. Let's dump it. And we're going to make big bar out of it. So I push a button and the lid comes up. I push a button and the furnace dumps 20,000 pounds of molten aluminum. I push a button, it comes back down, another button, the lid's closed. Well, now, I have to get on a giant asbestos coat. You ever heard of that? Asbestos coat, gloves, and metatarsal shoes and a helmet. And I have to get up on top of that lid that was just over that furnace that we just emptied. And I have to drop a steel bar down a channel. So it's an electric induction. So those channels, when you emptied it up, they would cool off just enough the aluminum would set up. Well, you have to get up on top, and you set a big steel bar down in there. Then you take this 10-pound sledgehammer, and you pound on it. Boom, ba ba boom, ba, and you bust that channel back out so that electricity, you know, it can melt the aluminum, it will flow. So you got to get on top of it. It's like standing on hell itself, that big induction furnace. Heat's coming up under that giant coat that you're wearing. Sweat is running off you like water over Niagara Falls. And it takes about 30 minutes twice in that 8-hour shift to do that, to empty it, stand on it, clean it out, and get off of it. So for basically 1 hour out of eight, you sweat something horrible. You work something horrible. But the other 7 hours, you sit in front of a giant 48-inch fan with all the water and pop you can drink, you know, and you write the numbers down every hour as to what the numbers are on the furnace to record stuff for the lab. So it's a great job. So I love this job. And so I noticed after a few weeks of working this job that every now and then there would be a guy who would walk below the mezzanine early in the morning or at the beginning of the shift. Always had on a white shirt, nice blue pants. He's carrying a clipboard. He never sweats. When everybody in this plant sweats, it's a big plant where we make high-powered cable for Tennessee Valley, Georgia Power. And so it's a big, hot place, you know. Well, he's never sweating. So I remember I asked my foreman one day when he walked by, I said, "Who's the guy in the white shirt that walks by every shift?" He said, "Oh, that's the lab technician." I said, "How come he doesn't sweat?" And he laughed. He said, "Well, he works in the lab." I said, "Is air conditioned?" "Oh, yeah, lab's air conditioned. Very sensitive equipment. It's air, it has to be." I said, "There's a job in this plant that's air conditioned?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Does he make more money than I do?" He said, "Yeah, he's a lab technician. He's a metallurgist." I thought, well, shoot. So I didn't say anything else. So when I got off from work at 3 o'clock, I was working a 7 to 3 shift, I went down to the personnel office, and I went in and asked the personnel lady. Now, she's just a secretary, very nice lady, doesn't really know, never been through the plant, I don't think, ever. So I go in and I ask her, I said, how do you get to be a lab technician? She said, "Well, you have to take a test." I said, "Well, when do you give the test?" She said, "Well, we're giving one next Thursday." I said, "Well, can I take that test?" And she looks a little confused. "Well, I guess." I said, "Well, what do I do? Do I fill out something?" She said, "Well, I have a piece of paper here," and it was on a clipboard, and there were, like, I think 17 names of people who are going to take the test to become a lab technician. Now, these are all people with degrees in metallurgy. I can't even spell metallurgy. And so I signed my name, number 18, Joe McGee. So I get off from work on Thursday. 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, they're going to give the test. I go down to the personnel office. I wear a blue uniform. Okay, they provide us uniforms. That's white with sweat. I have sweat so much in those 2 30-minute sessions. The salt's just in my clothes. So I walk in. Here's all these guys, college graduates, have their sports coats and their sports ties on. I walk in. The guy giving the test says, "Can I help you?" I said, "Yes, sir. I'm here to take the test." He said, "I don't think so." I said, "Yes, sir, I am." Well, sure enough, where I'd handwritten my name on that list of the other people taking the test, somebody saw it and retyped it, so my name looks official. It's typed. I said, "No, my name's Joe McGee." So, "Well, I reckon so. Have a seat." So when they came, they handed the test out, and it was a multiple choice, 100 questions, A, B, C, or D. So I'm reading through to find out, you know, like most people take a test, I'm trying to figure out, what do I know? What can I guess at? Well, I don't know anything. It's got about a micrometer, and we had a very rural high school where I went, and we got a welder, and we had some wood, some saws. I don't know anything about a micrometer. And so I'm just trying to guess. I'm looking at it. What does that say? I don't know, but I think it's this. And then I did the multiple choice. So I'm looking at it. It's a 2-hour test. I look at the first question, don't know the answer to that second one. I don't know the answer to that third one. I don't know about that. And so I realized, well, I don't know. So I went back up to A, multiple choice, A, B, C, or D. I go up to A, number one. A, number 2, B, number 3, C, number 4, D, number 5, A, number 6, and I just went A, B, C, D through the whole test. Took me about 20 minutes, a 2-hour exam. I'm just reading through A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, and I finished, and I went back and reread it just in case maybe I misunderstood something because I don't understand any of the questions, and so I'm just guessing. So I get up, and I go hand my test in. 30 minutes hasn't passed. I'm through. Well, the rest of these guys are going to take 2 hours to take this metallurgical test. Well, my gosh, when I walked up, they thought he's a genius. The guy's a genius. He's already finished. Well, I'm not a genius, I guess. I didn't know anything. couple of weeks later, I'm working up my job up on the furnace, and my foreman comes yelling at me, McKee, what did you do? I said, well, what did you do? They want you down the lab. I said, oh, I took that test to be a metallurgical test to be a lab technician. You no good blankety blank. Get out and take care of that. You weren't supposed to take that test. So I get off work at 3 o'clock. I go down to the lab. I've never been in it. I've seen the door, you know, on the outside of the plant. What is that door? Well, that goes into the lab. So that's where the lab foreman, the guy's named Steve Radline, he had worked for NASA at one time, real smart chemical engineer. And so I'm going to interview. I'm going to see him. So I walked in the lab. Oh, people, I wish you could have felt it. Coming off that hot floor, walking to air conditioning, the lab was immaculate. White walls, stainless steel, floors. You could eat your lunch off of it. They're playing classical music on the radio. Well, we don't listen to classical music out on the floor. We got five different country stations. You can't boot scoot to any of them. They won't agree on the station, you know. When we eat lunch, we either bring a bologna or peanut butter sandwich, or we eat that pineapple cream cheese out of the machine. And but that's not good for you. Well, these guys get their lunch catered from a delicatessen. I mean, that day they're eating corned beef on rye. They're playing a game called cribbage. I never heard of cribbage. I've heard of cabbage. I know about chess, but I don't know what cribbage is. So they're playing cribbage or listening to classical music. It's a macabre. My gosh, I've gone to heaven. So I walk in to interview, and Mr. Radline's sitting there behind his desk smoking a lime green pipe. Metallurgist, he deals with metal stuff. He said, have him seat, Joe. And the first words out of his mouth said, Joe, why do you want to be a lab technician? I said, well, Mr. Radline, I have a lot of hobbies. Work's not one of them. I work for cash. And y'all make a lot better money than we do in here. Plus, you know, it's air conditioned. I sure like this. And plus, I like this classical music. I don't know who's singing or what they're saying. I don't understand it. But I sure like it better than the country we're listening out there. And, you know, y'all make more money than we do. And my daddy says, you know, Tommy said, I got a lot of hobbies. Work's not one of them. I work for cash. Well, he kind of grinned and bust out laughing. He said, well, you know, you flunked this test. I said, well, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew I didn't do well on it because I guessed at everything. I didn't know the answers to any of it. I figure I got a 50-50 chance of getting 50. He's puffing his pipe. He said, you scored a 9. Now, you understand, I'm trying to listen. 9. The guy said, they rounded up. Did I do that good? 9. Maybe it's going to 90. And it dawned on me, no, I scored a 9 out of 100. He said, Joe, you scored a 9 out of 100. He said, Joe, don't ever gamble. You're not a good guesser. I said, well, so I'll make a run at it. And then he said this, you know, you weren't supposed to take this test. Only people with degrees in metallurgy are supposed to take this test. I said, well, nobody told me. So all of a sudden, he's just puffing his pipe, staring at me. I thought, well, so much for this test. I made a run at it. And all of a sudden, he said, you know, I got a challenge I need to talk to you about. I thought, what's he going to ask me? He's a chief chemical engineer for Old Massa. What can I possibly tell him? And so he says, I got a challenge. The guys on the floor, the blue-collar guys, do not like my white-collar electricians and our lab technicians. My lab technicians don't like them, and I got a liaison problem, and my plant managers want me to fix it. You know, according to your personnel file, and he had got it because, see, had I not got the interview, he never would have seen my file. And one of the things he did ask me when he saw my personnel file, he said, Joe, do you not like working here? I said, no, I love working here. Why? He said, well, on your personnel file, you keep changing. You keep moving machines. I said, well, every machine I work for, everything I do, pays more than the last place I was at. I got a lot of hobbies. Work's not up. I'm working for cash. He said, all right. So he covers it up, and he says, I got a liaison problem. Would you be willing to come into the lab for 3 months and see if we can teach you the formulas to test all the process? Now, Joe, we're not going to teach you the math. I don't think you can learn it. But, I said, I do think you can learn the formulas. I said, sure, I'd love to come along and see if I can learn, and you could take advantage of me. So long story short, I go in for 3 months. I got a white shirt and some blue pants, you know. I came on my job out there, and 3 months later, I was one of the first non-degreed lab technicians that ever hired. I got the job. About 2 months later, I got that job, and I realized that there's 3 of us on each shift, and one of us is a senior lab technician. I remember he became eventually one of my best friends. I said, what makes you a senior lab technician? He said, I said, you make more money than we do? He said, yeah. I said, you make more money than we do? He said, yeah. I said, why do you make more money? I do everything you do. He said, because I'm the senior lab technician. I thought, oh, I don't like that. So I went in to see Mr. Radline the next day when he came to work. My boss said, I want to be a senior lab technician. He said, Joe, you can't be a senior lab technician. You don't know how to run the quantometer. Now, quantometer is a really big machine, like a massive walk-in closet. Buttons everywhere. And what it does, it takes a carbon rod, it does a burn analysis, shoots a bolt of lightning into a piece of aluminum, and the burn tells you how much manganese and copper and zinc's in there, so you know what to add when you go back out. So, I said, well, I can learn to run. So what I did, I got to where I'd stay over at every shift. First shift, I'd stay over 2 hours on second. Second, I'd stay 2 hours on third. Third, I'd stay over 2 hours on days, because when they tested the material with a quantometer, it's the first of every shift. So for 2 months, I just stayed over. What are you doing? Well, I'm just watching them test, you know, run the quantometer. And so, anyhow, 2 months later, they said they had an opening, and they were going to hire a new person. Well, I went and told Mr. Randall, I said, I want that job. He said, Joe, you can't have that job. You're not a metallurgist. I said, I can do that job. He said, no, you can't run the quantometer. I said, yes, I can. You come watch me. So sure enough, I'd learn. So he kept me in there for almost 2 hours testing me to see if I could run that quantometer. He finally shook his head, kind of grinned, said, I'll get back with you. Well, long story short, I'm the first non-degree guy to hire. They've hired, that was a non-degreed lab technician.
Hey, thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear more of what God can do in your life. He's got a great future for you and your family, and we are here to help you get there. Make sure and go to our website, joemcgeeministries.com. We've got all sorts of materials, books, DVDs, you name it, all there to help you, your marriage, and your family succeed.